This is Indie Book Publishing. Indie Book Publishing is a show about new books and the authors who wrote them. It's an opportunity for prospective readers to hear directly from the writers, to hear what inspired them to write and publish, and to hear all the inside details about their books. And now, Indie Book Publishing with your host, Steve Jorgensen.
Greetings for Steve Jorgensen and for Indie Book Publishing Balboa Press. This is J. Douglas Barker. Today I visit with author Priscilla Griffin. She's written a book titled Lifting the Veil. This is an intriguing and very intense read. Total of about 240 pages, if I remember correctly, and deals with a very dark subject. Priscilla, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
On the cover of your book, it talks about a patient that you were working with. You are a psychotherapist. And it recounts that in 2005, you'd been working as a psychotherapist for 25 years when a 42-year-old woman entered your office seeking counseling to cope with her husband's death. What happened from that point forward? Why did you feel the need to tell her story as well as yours?
Well, it was just such a different situation than I had ever experienced before as a psychotherapist. She came in to deal with the death of her husband, and it turned into so much more. She had suicidal ideation. She was depressed, and she just wasn't getting better, and all the tools I had always used for 25 years didn't seem to be making a difference for her. And then she finally revealed that she had multiple personalities, and then the personalities began presenting themselves in my office, and what became intriguing and scary was that two of the personalities were dangerous, and as the therapy evolved, there was so much to learn from it. There were so many life lessons for me, for her, just in delving through all of this. It changed me spiritually. It changed my psychological perception on things and how psychiatric hospitals treat patients. And it was so in-depth that I felt I had to share it.
When you say they started to reveal themselves, now, did she consciously reveal those different personalities, or did you have to draw them out through counseling?
Yes, I had to draw them out. At one point, and it speaks about this in the book, her voice started to get dark, and she started to act different, and I hadn't had any experience with multiple personality, so I thought that's what was happening, but I said, well, I'm just going to start paying attention a little bit more, because it only happened for like a minute or two. But then as she began trusting me, she revealed that, you know, that was true, that she had multiple personality disorders, and several of the personalities came out in my office. There was one four-year-old that played with the sand tray that I have in my office, and there was another one that Damien, who was the dark, suicidal, homicidal personality that threatened me and said, if you continue working with Francine, you'll be sorry. So it became intense.
You mentioned also, at least I've noticed that you have a background, at least from a religious standpoint, as a Roman Catholic. Exorcism is something that the Catholic Church embraces. Is that anything that entered your mind?
No, not at all. I didn't think of that at all. My faith came into play because I had never experienced like anything like this before, so I didn't know what to do with her because she came in and I never knew what to expect, and I had tried to get some supervision, but it didn't lead me anywhere, so I started to pray. I started to ask God for guidance because I didn't know what to do. So as I, you know, asked God for more guidance, it became clearer and things got revealed, and in the midst of all of this, in the book, it talks about my Catholic church got closed. You know, throughout the country, there's been many Catholic churches closed, and that affected me on such a deep level. So it sort of coincided with the work I was doing with Francine, with my church closing and what that was doing to my faith. And it's a real weave of psychological, spiritual, and religious. It weaves throughout the whole book.
And what was the outcome, and how long did it take for her to complete her therapy?
Well, we met for 5 years, and she got better for several years. There was at least a two-year period where she was better, where she had stopped therapy. And at that point, she had embraced her own spirituality. She had been raised quite religious and walked away from the church because her youth ministers had sexually abused her. And she had stepped away because of that. And when she started to re-embrace her faith and in her beliefs, she started to get better. Once she connected with her spiritual self. The book talks a lot about the difference between the light and the dark. There's a battle for our souls. There's the light part of us and there's the dark part of us. We're all one coin with two sides. And her darker sides were coming up, but she also had this very light side to her that was a very good side. And a lot of the book talks about that battle we all have within us between the dark and the light.
Did it come out in therapy which of the events in her past had caused her to step over the precipice into this dark area of her life?
I believe the abuse. She had been abused by a neighbor when she was young. She had been abused by her youth ministers. She had a very traumatic childhood. She wasn't allowed to be her true self. She had some quite psychic abilities as a young child, and she would reveal things that she shouldn't know. And they called her evil and a spawn of Satan. And they, you know, her family, her teachers, people started telling her she was evil. And I think there was a part of her that truly embraced that. And that where is some of the darker personalities came from.
Very sad tale.
Yes. And at the end, again, you had asked me earlier how what the outcome is, and I almost don't want to say because the end of the book is so intriguing. I don't even want to say how it ends because it's so important at the end that you don't know.
Well, can you reveal if it's positive or negative? Perhaps
it
not.
It makes you. It's neutral. In a way, it'll make you think about your life purpose. It'll make the reader think about the light and the dark within themselves. It'll make you think about one thing I can tell you is the psychiatric hospital that she ended up in near the end of the book didn't like the work that I was doing because I had done some hypnosis and some past life regression with her, and they didn't understand that. The book is a lot about the mind-body-soul connection, and psychiatric hospitals in this country don't understand the soul connection piece. They do some mind-body things. And the psychiatrist told Francine that if she didn't stop therapy with me, that he would stop treating her and she wouldn't be able to use that hospital. So it became almost like a battle between what I believed in and what the psychiatric facility believed in. And I wasn't going to back down and neither were they.
Your book is an intriguing read. Who is this book going to appeal to and why?
Well, I think it will appeal to people that it's a nonfiction, it's a memoir, but it's dramatic. So whoever likes going to movies that are drama or reading books that are drama, this is a true drama. It also is interesting to people that like psychology, that like to, I mean, there are sessions. I mean, I explain entire sessions in the book as I sat with that client, and people like to know, ooh, what happens in a psychotherapy session. And I also think it'll help people that are struggling with their own battles between the light and the dark. A lot of people have anxiety, depression, substance abuse, because they've lost themselves. And this book is about how do we find our true selves? Who are we? You know, why do we suffer? Why do we have symptoms? And the more we get back to being our true self, the better we'll feel. So anyone that's looking to feel better and is dealing with some of these, you know, psychological and physical issues will, you know, take something from this.
In writing this book, did you draw from your personal files or do you journal? How did you assemble everything and put it in book form?
Yes, well, the nice thing is Francine agreed that I write this book, and she gave me all her journal entries. So the book is so true because I just took her journal entries and sort of transcribed them into the book. And also the sessions were so intriguing to me that I wrote down after the session, I was just writing and writing and writing. And at the moment, I didn't know why I was writing, but I just knew that I better write this down. So again, it wasn't just recollection. I had been writing things down all along.
the journaling and the aspect of your patient actually sharing her notes, that's a very powerful well to draw from. How long did it take you to actually put your book together?
5 years. I've been working on it for 5 years.
Did you begin with the intent of writing a book about this from day one, or was it just something that accumulated over the counseling sessions and your interaction with your patient?
Yeah, it just accumulated. I did not have an intention of writing a book at all, but several years into the treatment, you know, as all the different situations that came up, it just felt like, boy, people could really be helped by this. My story and Francine's story could actually help others with their own things that they're going through. So it sort of evolved, and then I actually started writing it in 2008. And I had finished treatment with her in 2010. So, you know, it was near the tail end that I said, boy, maybe we should write a book about this because it could really help.
Part of your philosophy is that life lessons are an important theme, are an important part of our existence and how we survive. What do you tell people that will help them with their own life lessons?
I say pay attention to what's going on. You know, if you have a symptom, whether it's psychological or physical, it's telling you something. You know, if you're always getting stomach aches or you're getting headaches or any kind of anxiety or depression, what is that symptom telling you? Because there's a life lesson there. Oftentimes I find that people just aren't being true to themselves. They're working at a job they hate, or, you know, in Francine's case, she had all this trauma she had never shared with anyone. And when you hold on to trauma, or you're living a life that doesn't match who you really are, then you develop symptoms.
You titled the book Lifting the Veil. How would you describe the reason you chose that particular title, and how would you introduce this to someone, this book?
Well, Lifting the Veil is, Francine had all these different personalities, but underneath was her true self. And I think we all do that. We have these masks that we portray to different people in different situations. And if you lift that, it's like a covering. We have this cover over us. And if we lift the cover, we find our true selves. So we all want to lift the veil and look deeper. Who are we? What's our purpose in life? Why have we come? What are we meant to do while we're here? How can we help others fight? You know, how can we make our lives better? So I introduced the book by telling people, you know, I've always been a psychotherapist. Now it'll be 30 years in May that I've been a psychotherapist. And, you know, I met this client, and the story was just so interesting that I felt I needed to share it.
In introducing this to someone, what makes it different from others in the marketplace?
Well, I think it's different because it's not just a story about a person with multiple personality disorder, because there are several books out there like that. This is more my story. It's my spiritual growth. It's my, oh my God, what is happening in the moment with this client. It's from my perspective, but it's also from her perspective because I have all her journal notes. I think what's different also is that it weaves my religious, because of my church closing and what that did to me, and her being abused by youth ministers, you know, the spiritual, because at one point, you know, I go for an angel reading, and as a devout Roman Catholic, like, what is that all about? I was really stepped out of my comfort zone, and the psychological, because of, you know, because I am a psychotherapist.
What was the most challenging part of writing this book, sharing this story?
It was because it was so about me. It was so emotional. I used somebody in New York City from New York Writers Workshop that said, at first it was more about Francine, and he said to me, this book is about you. You have to make it about you. And that was the hardest part. I had to sit back and go, okay, who am I? And what was my childhood like compared to Francine's? And what happened to me when I was in college or as a psychotherapist? So it's about my life also.
And became very introspective then.
Yes, yeah, because it was like, what about my life lesson? So the difficult part about writing it was I really had to explore some things that I hadn't thought about for a while. And it was odd because as I wrote about my church closing, I was sobbing. And I'm like, wow, I didn't realize how deeply that had hurt me. So it was interesting that I really, that was the hardest part. Of like, it was emotional for me to write all this down. And it's very uncomfortable to talk about. I tend to be more of a shy person, so it was hard for me to talk about my personal life, you know, and putting it out there like that. And as a psychotherapist, I used some alternative treatment. I did hypnosis and I did past life regression. So it was scary for me that there are professionals that will think what I did wasn't appropriate, or there'll be some negative feedback on it. But I can't let that stop me, because I think the message is just too strong to help people.
What I like about the book is that it's 243 pages, but it's not just clinical psychology.
Oh, not at all.
It's very, you take the reader on an adventure.
It reads like a novel.
Because
somebody
novel.
Said to me, I just came back from vacation, so there was people from all over the country, so I gave a few copies out, and they were reading it at the pool, and they said, wow, this is, like, I thought it was going to be a self-help book. I'm like, oh, no. They said, this is like reading a novel. It just brings you on this journey, and it makes, everyone that I spoke to that had read it said, it makes you think about your own life. It just brings you, it does, it's a journey. It brings you on your own journey. Even though it was my journey, it brings you on your own journey.
It draws you in.
Absolutely, from the very first chapter. The first page draws people in.
Absolutely, it does. The title of the book is Lifting the Veil, and our author is Priscilla Griffin. Priscilla, where can we get copies of your book?
Well, you can get copies through BalboaPress.com, through my own website, PriscillaGriffin.com. It's also available Amazon.com, BarnesandNoble.com. It's an e-book. So pretty much anywhere that other books are available, you'll be. I think I even found it on eBay.
Wow.
Yeah.
This is a book, although based on fact, is full of intrigue and suspense. Lifting the Veil, Priscilla Griffin, thank you for joining me today.
Thank you.
For Indie Book Publishing, Balboa Press, this is J. Douglas Barker.
You're listening to Indie Book Publishing, and we'll be right back after these messages.
Hi, everybody. This is Pete Dix of Beatles and Beyond. Why don't we all come together and hear some of the tracks off the latest Beatles release on this radio station? Yes, why don't you look up the schedules on this radio station and join me and Beatles listeners everywhere to hear these latest releases from the Beatles on Beatles and Beyond with Pete Dix.
Connect with Juliana and connect with what lies beneath. Friday afternoons at 4 or 3 Central on TogiNet.com. Juliana is a marriage, family, and child therapist who wants people to connect. Connect with what lies beneath, those truths and answers. And through her counseling practice, she has helped others find their personal power and fulfill their dreams. And she wants to do the same for you. Here on Connect with Juliana. Through intimate discussions, intriguing subject matters, and the expertise of her guests. For more on the show and Juliana, check out her webpage. Connect with Juliana in media.com. Juliana will cover it all. Nothing is off limits. She wants to know what matters to you. Make the connection. Tune into TogiNet to connect with Juliana to find out the facts that could be hidden beneath the surface. Connect with Juliana on TogiNet to make a quality connection in your life. Friday afternoons at 4, 3 Central on TogiNet.com. Welcome back to Indie Book Publishing, helping authors publish, promote, and sell their books around the world. Now, back to your host, Steve Jorgensen.
Greetings for Steve Jorgensen and for Indie Book Publishing, Balboa Press. This is J. Douglas Barker. The book today is titled Bar Studies Inspiration, Daily Christian Devotions for Bar Marathon from Start to Finish. And our author is Ida Tyree Heitch. Welcome.
Thank you. It's good to be here, Jay.
And this is a devotion not for those who like to visit and party at bars and drink. This is something else, isn't it?
Yes, correct. This is something else. It's a devotional about those persons who are actually studying for a nerve-wracking, mind-boggling exam rather than sitting at the bar having a nice drink.
In talking to you prior to hitting the go button on my record, I was curious about the 57-day study guide that you have put together, or devotional, and you explained that to me. Explain it to our listeners. Why 57 pages or 57 devotionals?
57 devotionals, yes. It seems a bit strange, but generally when a person is studying for the bar, they may start 3 months out, but more than likely it's about 2 months out. And after about the first couple of weeks, especially if they're using a bar study course, then after about 2 or 3 weeks, then that frustration sets in. The fear starts setting in. So I am starting the bar studies inspiration right about that time. And from that time to the day that the reader takes the exam, the bar exam, is about 57 days. And the 57th day in the book actually is the last day of the person who takes the 3-day exam. The number pulled out the sky for just 57 days.
And the reason you know about this is because you're also a practicing attorney.
Correct. I'm a practicing attorney. I'm a practicing attorney who decided to take the bar after she had retired from a successful career. But I failed the bar. And I went through the anxiety of taking the bar exam after having failed the bar exam, the anxiety of thinking that you're not going to measure up. And so I thought, I wish someone could just have some kind of devotion or some inspiration during this time. And I looked for it. I tried to find something, and I couldn't find anything. And my daughter went through the same frustration. So I don't know if there are millions of other people or thousands of others out there who have gone through this, taking the bar once before and then going through taking it again as a failure, or taking the bar for the first time, because we go through it even when we're taking it for the first time. I have no idea what it is about the bar exam. I've not taken any other major professional exams, so perhaps others experience this in other professions. But with the bar exam, you just never know if you're doing the right things, if you're studying the right things. So that's the reason I wrote this inspiration, for those people who may be going through those same types of issues.
And if you're a professional or a non-professional, this book should appeal to you.
Absolutely.
Your devotionals are not long. They're 1 or 2, 3 pages in length. Tell us what in the devotionals is something that's going to grab their attention. Why should they gravitate to your devotionals?
Well, I'd like to say that, I like to think rather, that the reason a person would gravitate to my devotional is because of the strength it gives for conquering the fear. The fear of failure, the fear of not focusing in the right area. And for the person taking the bar for the first time, it's just really the fear of the unknown and wondering if you're actually staying focused, wondering if you dare take a break and do something, do something fun. And I wrote this book, these devotions, reliving where a person who studied for the bar would be at that particular time, with 3 weeks from the bar exam, or 2 weeks from the bar exam, or 1 week, or 3 days from the bar exam. And so it's not just like your common devotional, because the devotion actually takes you on a journey. And so that's why someone will want to read it, because if you go and start, say, day 38, which is rest well, day 38 was written at the point where I think and pretty much know that the bar examinee is really tired, and they're about halfway before that day to sit before that exam. And so it's just a good way to read the devotion. It's very short, it has music suggestions at the end of it. And really, when I went through it each day and listened to the music, those persons who are music lovers will probably find it even more uplifting when they actually use their computers and listen to the video or watch the video of the music that's recommended at the end of each devotion.
I think it's a great approach. You have titles such as Running on Empty, something I can relate to. Passion Leads to Purpose. There is no competition, no regrets. And the Trust Agreement. I like the titles of your devotionals, the Trust Agreement. What is that? What is the title, the Trust Agreement? What is that referring to?
You know, when I wrote the Trust Agreement, every person who studied for the bar exam and studied for an essay knows that there's a chance that they're going to have an essay regarding Under Wheels and Trust. And I thought, let's deal with the Trust Agreement, where we take the same type of information that the examinee is learning to be able to write in an essay, but using it as a message from Christian principles. Here we talk about how Job speaks of the way he takes, and he's speaking of how he conducts his life and how he's furthering his life regardless of the pressure he has. And we take this and begin to set it up like an essay where Job is giving his life away, and he's the settler, and he's entrusting his life to God. So we take the trust agreement and show the trustee settler, we show God as the trustee, and we show the person, us, the person who's reading it, we as the beneficiaries of this particular trust. And I really wrote that thinking whoever reads it on that particular day would have already gone through the Trust and Wheels essays and find it really reviving to know that here's something about trust agreement. And it's refreshing to me because it's also an inspirational moment. But then I'm going to remember it, and maybe when I see an essay where I need to apply it, I can remember the bar devotional regarding trust agreement. I ended, if you don't mind me just going a little bit more in detail.
No, that's fine. Please.
I tell them that they have, by the time they get to this particular devotion, they have at least 4 or 5 weeks from the last week before the bar exam. And I tell them to look at it as a trust and entrust everything to God. And I also, at that particular point, refer them to go back and read day 4's inspirational moment for refreshing, because it links to the fact that if you're are a Christian, or even if you're not, but you believe in certain principles regarding the body, mind, and spirit, then you can consider your goal for passing a bar exam as a part of a trust entrusted to you by God, as long as you don't allow fear to creep in and fear to weaken your trust.
Quotation you make at the top of this devotion, and the reference from Job is, "He knows the way that I take. When he has tested me, I will come forth as gold." And that was Job's quote to God, or to his friends.
Yeah.
And Henry Kissinger, you say, said this, "A diamond is merely a lump of coal that did well under pressure."
Excellent
thought. And then you suggest the song by the same title, "Gold," by Nicole Britt.
Right.
So those
by
are
Nicole Britt.
Yes, those are those are good ways to approach the devotionals. Every one of these has a song that relates back to the encouragement that you have placed during that day's read.
Jay, I didn't just haphazardly pick the song. I guess writing the day a devotional for a particular day didn't seem as difficult as picking the right song. I'm a music lover, and picking the right inspirational song to just gel and seal the message was very key for me in writing this book, which is why I strongly encourage persons who really want to really feel the impact that I intended by this book to actually make the book interactive by having your computer or your phone or something and actually go and Google that song and click on that song and listen to the words of that song. The words of the song to every one of these devotionals is very, very inspirational and impress upon the examiner, the reader, what the message really is.
And day 57.
I went through them, and sometimes I actually cried. I could feel myself like going through this experience all over again and being encouraged.
And the last chapter or the last entry is day 57, the bar exam, the day after. Forget it, is your encouragement. And you take the message from 1 Peter, which says, casting all your anxieties on him because he cares for you. And your last song is by Mary Mary, Thank You, Lord. So,
thank you, Lord.
Releasing all of your cares and then being comfortable with the outcome. That's great.
That's right. That's right. Just saying thank you. You know, just saying thank you, believing and saying thank you. Thank you. And you know when you've given it your best. When my daughter failed the bar exam, I mean, she took the bar exam, right, of course, right after out of law school, but she also scheduled a wedding date right after law school. And I had suggested to her, don't take the bar in July, take the bar in February. Take the bar exam in February since you're getting married in September. She didn't understand that you have to give it your full focus. A wedding is a major event in anyone's life, and she's the only child, and of course, there were a lot of plans that were made for the wedding. You didn't have to take the bar exam right out of law school just because everybody else was doing it, and she did, and she paid the price. So when I say forget it, even when she finished, she knew she had not done well because she knew she had not given it her all. But I still say, even to the person who at the end, you know that there were some things you didn't do. You still just need to forget it.
Forget it and trust.
Forget it and say thank you. Forget it and trust. And I want to share another instance also, Jay, that's very, very recent, of one of my adopted sons. He used the Bar Studies Inspiration book. He had many instances in this book. When you read the devotion, you'll see I refer to those people who are really filled with anxiety because they have jobs already. They're working in law firms, and they know that their supervisor or attorney, senior attorney, is expecting them to pass that bar exam, and so they have that pressure on them over the other persons who just had the pressure just wanting to pass it. My adopted son was one of those people. And this summer, and he took the July bar. He had just graduated in May, and he had a job already, and he needed to pass the bar, and everybody was expecting him to pass it. He was also working and studying in the law firm. And 1 week before the bar, he realized that he had not given focus in one particular critical bar area that we call the MEE, the one where you're actually an attorney sitting for the exam, and you get all your case files and everything there. He didn't focus on it like he should have. And when he went into the bar exam, it's one thing to not know what you're going to make, but to know for sure what you're going to make because you never got to it, you already know you got a zero. So you have to have two. He only did one. And he remembered, he didn't dwell on it, Jay. He trusted. He said, the book said, forget it. Forget it all. When he told me and then several other people that he hadn't taken it, I just started praying. I kept him in prayer every day. I don't know if the other people did or not, but constantly just praying that somehow or another, despite all of that, he could pass the bar exam, and he did.
Wow.
He sometimes when you know you have it, when you already know you got a zero, it can just put you in the frame of mind where you just think all is lost. And you go through that whole bit of anxiety while you're waiting for that exam, and that can be, I mean, those results, and it could be 2 months. So that's why I wrote Forget It All. Just forget it all. Listen to Mary Mary, Thank You, Lord. Just forget it all.
Great idea.
Forget it.
This book is titled Bar Studies Inspiration, Daily Christian Devotions for Bar Marathon from Start to Finish.
And it's a marathon.
It is a marathon. Now, life is a marathon, and so is faith.
Yes, it
and
is.
Your walk of faith.
Yes.
And our author is Ida Tyree Heitch. Thank you so much for joining me today. Where do we get copies of this book?
Well, you can get copies of the book from BalboaPress.com, from Amazon.com, Books a Million, or you can just Google it. Google Bar Studies Inspiration, and my name will come up. Bar Studies Inspiration will come up, and all the places you can purchase the book will be there.
Thank you, Tyree, for joining me today. Enjoyed the visit.
My pleasure. My pleasure.
For Indie Book Publishing and Balboa Press, this is J. Douglas Marker.
You're listening to Indie Book Publishing, and we'll be right back after these messages. Join us for Self-Aid Success Stories with Helen Wu, Wednesday nights at 10, 9 central on toginet.com. Helen Wu was born and raised in San Francisco's Chinatown, and after a very difficult upbringing, fighting depression, abuse, and addictions, she finally finds herself genuinely happy inside and out. Helen believes in taking our positive thinking and doing something positive to achieve a positive outcome. She's here to make a positive difference in your life, to be your game changer, your aha moment mentor. She's ready to help both men and women get into a better place. Helen Wu is also the author of Self-Aid Success Stories, 25 Success Stories from Successful Entrepreneurs. Inspired by Ellen DeGeneres, Helen wants the world to know that just because we find ourselves in a difficult situation doesn't mean we have to stay there. We can aid ourselves to a better life. So join us for Self-Aid Success Stories with Helen Wu, Wednesday nights at 10, 9 central on toginet.com. Welcome back to Indie Book Publishing, helping authors publish, promote, and sell their books around the world. Now, back to your host, Steve Jorgensen.
The title of the book, Blessings, Questions and Answers, and the author is Michael Lewis, and Michael joins us now on Indie Book Publishing, this interview brought to you by Westbow Press. Hello, Michael.
Hello, it's good to be here. Steve.
Well, it's great to have you with us. You're going to cover significant questions and answers regarding our God-given blessings, these great God-given blessings of, you know, you're going to talk about the ones that occur early in life and the ones later in life, as you call them, more goal-oriented, and where the early ones are just kind of nature-oriented. So you have a really, well, you have an engineer's point of view on blessings, which makes it very unique.
Well, I am an engineer, and I did engineering work until I retired from my job 30-some years. So I am experienced. I'm trained and experienced in engineering-type work. And it's mostly solving problems, laying out plans, accomplishing those plans. And that's what I've learned is the goal of blessings is to lay out goals, develop plans, and work toward receiving them.
Why write the book? What prompted this idea?
Well, God gave me a blessing last summer, and we'll talk a little bit more about what type of blessing I received. It was a goal-oriented blessing. And I had had brain surgery 2 years prior to that, and it took me a while to get back to normal. And I had some old material, old notes that I'd taken on blessings, and I happened to go through those. And when I did, I was approached by God who said, "You need to publish this stuff in a book." And I didn't want to at first, so I tried to ignore it, but he wouldn't let me do that. So I ended up going ahead and publishing the book.
You make maybe a controversial statement concerning your book. You say pursuing a blessing goal is much more Christian-like than focusing on avoiding sins and trying with all your might to be saved from sin. Now, give us what you mean by that.
Well, as a Christian growing up, my common habit was to identify the sins I committed and go through the process for trying to replace or get forgiveness for those sins. And since then, here the last few years, it's occurred to me that that's a top priority, but there's another top priority, and that is listening to God's blessings to you and giving it your best effort to achieve those blessings. And these blessings are given to each one of us Christians. I'm not the only one who's had one who says, publish this book. I've had several others in my lifetime, and I'm sure that all other Christians have had them as well. And we can talk about some examples of
sure.
them if you'd like to.
Well, in just a moment. But first of all, just define, what is a blessing?
A blessing is some direction from God in this goal-oriented one. There are three types of blessings. One type is natural blessings, things that you're born with that you have forever, your mother and father, your particular ones you have, your birthplace, your sex, the siblings that you have, your hair color, your skin color, your eye color, your level of intelligence, your hearing, and your physical skills are just a few of them. We could go on and get down to talking about fingerprints, but those are blessings that we've received, or characteristics that we have received naturally, along with skills from God when we're born and grow up. We also have a second type of blessing that I call safety blessing, and it has to do with someone's life after an accident or disease, which normally would take their life, but God steps in and keeps them alive in a surprising way. He also rewards people who solely need to receive something big or enriched enough, maybe financially, that helps themselves and their families. And I had one where I almost drowned in Florida back 10 years ago, and I was down to the last second or two, or last few seconds of my life out in the ocean, and said my last prayer, and all of a sudden this guy from Ohio shows up, Larry Nodal, who lives in right outside of Cincinnati, and he saved my life right after I'd said my prayers. So that one's a common one, or not that common, but it's one that we hear about from time to time, someone who gets in a situation and they come out walking like nothing ever happened to them. Then the third type of goal is the one I've been talking about mostly in this book, and they represent goals from God for special and specific performance, and the need to be executed those goals in a successful way. Now, I've had situations where I've had helping a teenager with a documented father and no money, just being a friend and helping him feel equal to everybody else, or helping a different type of college student when I was in college, who this guy wanted to be liked and accepted, but he wasn't because he was so different. And then helping young girls of divorced parents who feel and need to feel respected and loved. And those two girls were my children. I could tell that story. Or helping a family at a family funeral feel proud and peaceful by delivering the eulogy for them. And then the last one, which will get a lot of people's attention, is helping a large organization feel fortunate and blessed as a group. And I've helped a 500-employee organization win a national quality award by focusing on what felt to me like a blessing from God, asking to focus on that with that organization in a way that would help everybody in it. And I did that with the CEO and president of the company, who was one of my best friends. But that's the type of things that occur with that goal-oriented type blessing that is received.
Now, you also share your poetic talents. You write some poems in the book. What part do they play in your book?
Well, it might just be a bad habit on my part, because I've written poems for my wife and daughters. I have four daughters their lifetimes, my children's lifetimes, and I have written about 1,000 of them. So I thought it would be, and it's gotten their attention. So I thought it'd be helpful to take a blessing for these 8 types of performance and convert it into a poem. And it might encourage people to read more of the book and those 8 performance areas to make sure that they found out as much as they could.
Well, talk a little bit about these 8 performance areas. You call it, how do you achieve your blessings through action plans? And then you have the different kinds of blessings listed.
Well, as you're an engineer, everything that comes up has specific goals associated with it. And the 8 areas that are covered by the book, there's a friendship blessing, one for love, ambition, patience, health, money, fun and adventure, and religion. And the religion is maybe as important or more so than the other 7, but they're all opportunities for identifying areas where you can get God's help to carry out your goal in that area, especially if He agrees with it. Priority. What else is there? But there are 8 of them that give you a blessing, a poem of the blessing, a vision for the future, and identify some likely or common ways to measure toward the goal of that area, so that you can determine whether you've succeeded or not. And that's just the way an engineer works.
Can you share one of those poems with us? Are they short or are they rather lengthy?
Let me do one on friendship rather than patience, because it means more to me. So we'll see how that works. But it starts out by saying, "May you be blessed with good friends by the score, friends on every corner and around every bend. Old friends and new ones, tried, true, and more. Friends who'll be there right up to the end. May you have friends you can count on whether you lose or win. Friends you can call on whether it's day or night. Friends who'll stick with you during both thick and thin. Friends who'll go to battle with you no matter the fight. May you have friendly relationships wherever you may go. Friends who know, understand, love, and accept the real you. Friends ready to say yes and reluctant to say no. Friends who will support and respect you whatever you do. May your friends always be available to lend you a hand, putting you almost the first entered on every guest list. Helping you never be lonely and feel left out of the band, making sure you never will be forgotten or always be missed. May no friends hold any malice on which you ill will, always being in the role of a reliable, faithful friend, one of many who will hang at your bar, your banner on the highest hill, always any stranger or enemy to vanish with the wind. May you keep your friends in touch with God in prayer, having a relationship where he supports them and you also the way, helping you all to find whether to go or whether to do there, him staying in touch with every way every day. That's the end of the poem.
Very good.
There are eight of those,
right,
that match up with the blessing of the eight and the vision for the eight.
What steps are needed to a person needs to take to receive a blessing?
Well, there are eight in the book.
Okay.
The process for success begins with the statement of the blessing for that area. And if somebody's reading the book, they're just reading that as an example of what could take place. They could take the blessing that's a full page as long as that poem that I just read, and they can add things or subtract things or alter things so that they have a blessing that they can live with. And then from there, they can develop an altered poem, a vision stating exactly how all that stuff would be if accomplished, and then identify some measures that they can keep up with, and then assess their success or their progress on that, either daily, weekly, or monthly, and then know how well they're carrying out that blessing. But their blessing would not be a general one like friendship. They'd have to identify a specific person or a specific group and help identify what they need to do to develop or maintain a close relationship with them to accomplish something. And a lot of times it's the accomplishment is what they can do to improve their lives or their ability to get along. And that's a common one right there in friendship.
Very good. Tell us how to get your book, Michael. Blessings, questions and answers. We've been listening to Michael Lewis.
Okay, to get a copy of my book, then you can contact Westbow Press, ask for it, or you can get online and look for it from that point of view.
Very good, Michael. Well, thank you so much for being with us on Indie Book Publishing.
Well, I hope it helped. I hope it helped.
And this interview has been brought to everyone by Westbow Press.
You've been listening to Indie Book Publishing with your host, Steve Jorgensen. Join us again next week at noon Eastern as Steve interviews another great author.